Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, my very favorite place to be each weekend because I get to share vital health information with you and you get to participate. You can call us at 888-302-3684. We await your phone calls. And among the things that I want to tackle this hour, I want to do a little damage control on a series of reports that came out on resveratrol that prompted some very, very unfair, uncritical press reportage that just passed along basically the press release from the medical journal which panned resveratrol. Again, journalists are asleep at the switch, and they simply act as an echo chamber for some of the stuff that gets put out in medical journals, articles that are poorly written, poorly researched, and poorly documented, and then amplified to the public in an irresponsible fashion. So we'll talk about resveratrol in just a very few minutes. 888-302-3684. Before we get to your phone calls, though, I want to share with you something that a patient said to me this week that is very, very interesting. It really goes to the heart of the theme of this program, Intelligent Medicine, and the theme of my website, and the theme of virtually everything that I do. Interacting with patients on a daily basis, and also putting out information about a wide variety of supplements. Our mission is intelligent medicine here. The patient told me that he went to see his primary care doctor. He says, look, the doctor is he's great. He's by the book. He's very thorough. I like it. I can get an appointment whenever I want. And his diagnostic skills are very good. You know, he can pinpoint usually what's going on with me. But he got a little bit of a back and forth with his doctor about the necessity to take a statin. And the doctor said, let's say hypothetically this patient's name is Bob. He said, Bob, you just have to take a statin. And Bob said, well, Bob being an engineer, he's analytical, and he wants to know the reason, the rationale. And he wasn't going to not take the statin, but he just wanted to know the reason that he had to take the statin. And the doctor said, Bob, let me just boil it down for you. If you don't take a statin, you're going to die of a heart attack. 100%. And the doctor had a little, one of these like blackboards in his office, not with chalk, but, you know, these new blackboards where you use like a magic marker on a whiteboard. And he wrote 100% as if to underscore and emphasize his point on the blackboard. And so Bob said, okay, you know, I'll take a statin. And he went ahead and he took one, and he had terrible muscle aches. He wasn't able to handle it. And then he patriotically tried another statin that his doctor prescribed, and he developed terrible insomnia, which is a less common but known side effects of statins. And he realized that he just wasn't tolerating the statins very well. So he I don't know whether with his doctor's cooperation or independently, he undertook an EBT heart scan, and he found he had zero plaque. Which means he is very unlikely to get cardiovascular disease. So the value of putting, even though his cholesterol is a little high, the value of putting him on a statin would be negligible. So he went back to his doctor and he started talking about this and saying, look, doc, I'm not sure. You know, first of all, I've had a bad reaction to the statins. And, oh, by the way, my EBT scan score, my calcium score is zero. So, you know, why do I really need to take a statin? And here's what the doctor said. He said, Bob, we doctors love ignorant patients. It makes our jobs so much easier. You ask too many questions. And I thought that really kind of encapsulates what's wrong with our medical profession these days, because we're, you know, too much in thrall of this model of the authoritarian doctor, the doctor who is all-knowing, omniscient, all-powerful, and it's kind of a... it's an asymmetrical relationship. It's like you go, the humble supplicant to your doctor, to obtain esoteric wisdom, and the doctor, in a seer-like fashion, tells you what to do, and you say, aye, aye, sir, or aye, aye, madam, as the case may be. And, you know, don't ask too many questions because, oh, by the way, doctors are limited in time these days. They have about 6 minutes for each patient, and patients who ask a lot of questions are, frankly, a royal pain in the you-know-where because they, you got to explain, you got to sit down. And the way I work, is I structure a lot of time for questions and hopefully intelligent and persuasive answers, because if I'm going to get a patient to do something, I want a patient to understand precisely the rationale for what they're doing. Because if it makes sense for the patient, A, the patient is more likely to comply, and remarkably, B, secondly, the patient is more likely to get better. Because if you do something that makes sense to you day in and day out, it sends subtle signals to your body, to your immune system, that every day in every way you are helping yourself and making yourself get better. It's called the compliance factor, and you can get a compliance factor with a medication. You can get a compliance factor with an herb, with a vitamin, with a homeopathic remedy. There's something about a daily practice that you believe is helpful and beneficial and that you understand and makes sense that is going to help you achieve wellness. And so I would paraphrase this doctor who says, we doctors love ignorant patients. I love intelligent patients who some doctors might consider a royal pain, patients who ask a lot of questions and enable me to spend some time with them, providing them with a rationale for whatever the heck it is that we're trying to accomplish with them, because that is more likely to achieve successful outcomes. Unfortunately, our current medical model ill-suited to providing that kind of back and forth because of the time pressure on doctors, the economic pressure. Doctors have to move a lot of patients through their offices these days to simply pay the rent and pay for the computers and pay for the malpractice insurance. And there's not enough time for that traditional practice of teaching. And in fact, the word doctor comes from the Latin doctore, which means a teacher, someone who teaches you what to do, doesn't necessarily reach for the prescription pad and hand you an RX, which is a simple panacea for your ills. All right, getting off my soapbox, we'll take your questions. 888-302-3684. I see we have Maria in Connecticut. How you doing, Maria?
Hi, Dr. Hoffman.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call. It's the time of year that I go to my doctor, and she sent me a list of the blood tests I should do before I go.
Right.
And besides the normal ones, the lipid profile, the metabolic, all those, there are a few other tests that sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And I have heard you talk about all of them, but now I'm confused. I have I'm confused. I would like your opinion which ones I should ask.
Okay.
I have a moderate aortic valve stenosis for which I take carvedilol.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to get into the particulars because I'm not going to get into like your whole medical history because it's too much.
But
ask me which tests you're thinking of asking for, and I'll tell you whether I think they're valuable.
Tell you, I just have a stress test that was okay that you talked before about the EBT heart scan.
Right.
And my stress test was okay. The ones I was asking was the homocysteine.
Yeah.
The oxidized LDL.
Beautiful.
The C-reactive protein.
Beautiful.
The cardio-CRP.
Beautiful.
And the essential fatty acids.
Beautiful. Okay, you know, so let me address that. Actually, I wrote about this in my book, Intelligent Medicine, and I also wrote about this in my book, How to Talk to Your Doctor About Complementary Alternative Medicine. You know, sometimes you can get your doctor to perform some tests they wouldn't ordinarily perform. Those tests that you mentioned are very sophisticated tests that are often not part of a regular panel, but they can be very useful. I will say this, though, is that doctors these days poo-poo homocysteine, and they've prematurely thrown that out as an important test to do. We're getting a little bit towards the time where we need to take a quick break. So, Maria, can you stay with us? Because I want to talk to this issue. You asked a good question, which is what additional tests, besides the usual panel, because we know, you know, the SMAC and the CBC and the urinalysis and, you know, your regular cholesterol, what additional tests can make your annual visit a more meaningful experience, a more useful experience in terms of furthering your health? That's a great question, Maria. And when we return, we'll address that. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
We all know that humans need probiotics, but your dog needs probiotics too. Some dogs have chronic digestive issues just like humans. Probiotics will aid digestion and help improve overall immune health. Hi, I'm Gail Pruitt, certified nutritionist and author of the Doggone Good Cookbook. I do nutritional research for both humans and canines, focusing primarily on digestive issues. So whether your dog has chronic digestive issues or just the occasional upset, I recommend that you give your dog a daily probiotic to balance your dog's gut flora. You know, eating right and taking the right supplements are so important for your good health and for your best friends. And the best probiotics I've found is Dr. O'Hara's probiotics. So make sure the nutrients you and your dog eat are providing the maximum benefits. And always share your Dr. O'Hara's probiotics. Your dog will love you for it.
Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're answering Maria's question about what additional blood tests can you ask your doctor for that will make your annual physical more meaningful? You know, the old-fashioned physical where they tap your chest and listen to your heart. Okay, fine. You know, all those things need to be done. You know, they do regular chemistry. And they do your analysis, and they do a CBC to look at your blood counts. And maybe they'll do an EKG, which is probably going to be unnecessary. You know, routine EKGs are becoming passe because, you know, really they should be directed to people who have heart problems, not done routinely. And the routine chest x-ray, bad idea. You get a lot of extra radiation exposure. It's unnecessary unless there's particular reason to look at your chest. If perhaps if you've been a smoker, even that has been challenged. Routine, annual x-rays, just a moneymaker for a lot of doctors. So what can you do? What additional tests can be done? Well, Marie asked about homocysteine. Many doctors will refuse to do homocysteine because a recent study showed that homocysteine, the study purports to say that homocysteine doesn't make a difference in terms of cardiovascular risk. It does, but giving B vitamins for a short period of time, at least conventional B vitamins to people with heart disease, doesn't seem to make a big difference in the short term. But what about the risk of dementia and cognitive decline? People with high homocysteines are at higher risk for cognitive decline. It might be kind of a large vessel disease that affects the heart. It might be more of a small vessel disease that's caused by high homocysteine that affects the brain and can cause the brain to deteriorate over time. So lowering homocysteine with B vitamins makes sense. If it's high, I like to do the test. Also, you mentioned HSCRP and cardio-CRP, they're actually one and the same. Highly sensitive C-reactive protein measures inflammation, particularly in the blood vessels, and that is a very important measure of cardiovascular risk. So you could have a high cholesterol, but if your C-reactive protein is very low, your cardio-CRP, or highly sensitive C-reactive protein is very low, you have less risk. So that's an important thing. It's often ignored. Also, you can slice and dice your cholesterol a variety of ways. You can, as Maria mentioned, you can look at oxidized LDL. That's important because sometimes LDL is high, but if it's oxidized, that's more consequential than if it's not oxidized. Free radicals oxidize and damage the LDL, making it more atherogenic. And there are types of LDL, large particle LDL, that's less dangerous than the small particles. So you can do the VAPS test or the NMR profile to find out about the particle size of your LDL. That's a useful way to quantitate your cardiovascular risk. Another simple test that can be done that's often overlooked is your hemoglobin A1C. A lot of doctors say, well, you're not diabetic, so we won't do that. No. In fact, I had a discussion with a patient saying, my doctor won't do the hemoglobin A1C because my doctor says I'm not diabetic. Well, hemoglobin A1Cs that are not in the diabetic range but that are borderline are predictive of a more rapid progression towards cardiovascular disease and cognitive decline. So even if it's, okay, you're not diabetic, your blood sugar is not 180, your hemoglobin A1C might be 5.9, which is considered normal, but still predictive of, a variety of risk factors. So that's important. Getting a vitamin D checked is very important because vitamin D is so highly associated with so many different problems. So vitamin D, I think, should be routinely checked by doctors, often not. But more and more, you can, reasonable doctors will include that as part of your test panel. And I might suggest that you also consider, as Maria suggested, your essential fatty acid, your ratio between omega, your 3-6 ratio. It's actually been found that that's a more important determinant of your cardiovascular risk than even your cholesterol or C-reactive protein, LP little a, all those things. Yeah, they're risk factors, but whether you have adequate omega-3s and whether you're limiting your harmful omega-6s from junk food, fast food, that's a big determinant of your cardiovascular risk. So you still with us, Maria?
Yes, and my question was, I shouldn't do both the C-reactive protein and the cardio CRP.
No, because the cardio CRP trumps the C-reactive protein is a less precise measure of your cardiovascular risk. And we do C-reactive protein in somebody who has a serious inflammatory disorder. But if you just want to screen someone for cardiovascular risk, you ask for the hsCRP or the cardio CRP. That's the one to ask for. Hey, you sound like a very astute medical consumer there. I hope your doctor listens to you.
Yeah,
you get the test that you want.
Yeah, she's very good. The only thing is that she used to work alone, and now she's in the group. And I don't know if it has anything with Medicare.
You see, here's the other thing is, and without getting a political soapbox, what's happening is that cost containment is hitting medicine in every way, shape, and form, and so it's hard to get the tests that you used to get. And my suggestion there is that if you may have to pay part of your medical bills if you want extraordinary tests. And, this is maybe the price that we pay for higher quality medical care, because we can get generic medical care that misses a lot of things and, might take care of, our most serious emergencies, thank God. But in terms of the higher quality medical care that we aspire to get, that could be harder to get under this, new system of cost containment. So ask for those tests, see if they're covered. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And this is Intelligent Medicine. And when we return, the big issue that we want to talk about this week, a study has appeared in a medical journal, the Archives of Internal Medicine, that suggests that taking resveratrol is worthless. And we're going to drill down and look at the particulars of that study, the way it was amplified in the press. So many press reports that say that, don't bother taking resveratrol. Resveratrol is a bust. The French paradox, waste of time. And we're going to take a look more closely at the facts underlying that. A premature conclusion that resveratrol is something that we should take out of our supplement regimens. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 888-302-3684. And we'll be back with that resveratrol story in just a moment.
A regular dose of Intelligent Medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. All right, we've had to man the battle stations, damage control mode, because yet another, I think, premature and biased study has come out questioning the value of one of the supplements that we think is really high up in the pantheon of useful nutraceuticals, and that is resveratrol, sometimes referred to by people erroneously as reverse-it-all, which is actually pretty cool because it has so many benefits that it well might be called reverse-it-all. But resveratrol it is, and you know, if you go back in time, it was originally propelled onto the scene by 60 Minutes. You remember a segment way back, must have been 20, 25 years ago, Morley Safer was sitting around in a French cafe, and he was savoring red wine, and he introduced to the American public the idea of the French paradox, under which it was found that French, who consume lots of fatty foods, pâté de foie, they smoke Gauloises, that they had a much lower risk of cardiovascular disease than the Brits across the channel, who consumed less in the way of red wine. Well, research proceeded at pace, and we recently saw the acquisition of a laboratory that studies resveratrol under Dr. David Sinclair by GlaxoSmithKline for the tidy sum of $700 million to undertake research on how they might improve on Mother Nature based on the resveratrol molecule. They were going to come up with designer molecules that were going to reverse cardiovascular disease and Alzheimer's and extend longevity. And it's been a bit of a flash in the pan. I think Glaxo has basically written off their $700 million investment because you can't really improve on Mother Nature. The natural resveratrol seems to do the trick. But the headlines this week came fast and furious. New study questions health benefits of resveratrol. Antioxidant in red wine has no benefit. Resveratrol compound in red wine, chocolate may not be so beneficial. Resveratrol may not be associated with improved health, and so on and so on and so on it went. So what's the real deal here? We actually called upon Bill Sardi this week. He's an investigative reporter and an expert on resveratrol to join us for one of our podcasts. You can listen to it in its entirety, and I recommend it very highly. It's at drhoffman.com, where we go over the study. And Bill has some concerns, and I have some additional concerns that I'll share with you. The study, first of all, published in the Archives of Internal Medicine, which is a JAMA publication, Journal of the American Medical Association, that actually has been responsible for putting out, I don't know what's in the drinking water in the water cooler there, but they have put out a series of studies that pan nutritional supplements over the past couple of years. One said, it's settled science. It's time to move on. Supplements are worthless. Basically, that's what they said in an editorial. Pretty radical conclusion based on a couple of cherry-picked studies. Then they took on fish oil. They said fish oil was no good. And on it goes. So we've commented on some of these studies in the past, but here's this one. This one looked at a bunch of folks in Tuscany where they drink red wine. And they looked at their intake of red wine, and then they looked at their death rate. And what they found is that there was no correlation between their consumption of resveratrol in the red wine and their death rate. So therefore, it was thought, you know, resveratrol is worthless. The red wine didn't protect them. But there's several flaws with the study. Number one, red wine consumption, wine consumption, alcohol consumption in general, is highly correlated with cigarette consumption. Because where mostly do you consume red wine? Well, in Tuscany, in a traditional society, you go to the bar and you have the wine and you smoke cigarettes. They don't have Mayor Bloomberg over there. So smoking cigarettes highly correlated with alcohol consumption. And if you drink a lot of alcohol and you get a lot of resveratrol, you're going to smoke probably even more cigarettes. And they said that they corrected for that in this study, but I don't think that they applied a correction strong enough to offset the deleterious effects of cigarettes. I'm not here to say that you can smoke cigarettes and drink wine, or you can smoke cigarettes and take resveratrol pills and, you know, you won't find your life curtailed by the cigarette smoking. Cigarette smoking overwhelms the effect of resveratrol. Also in that study, and they kind of buried the lead in that study, lifespan wasn't enhanced. But one line in that study, if you read very carefully, shows that people who consumed red wine rich in resveratrol had about half the risk of cognitive decline. I mean, they still died at the same rate. All right. And I guess that trumps the benefits in terms of cognitive decline. But a halving of cognitive decline is highly significant. Also, by drinking red wine, you probably only get, 3 to 5 milligrams of natural resveratrol a day. And so it's hard to comment on the effects of taking a resveratrol pill, which might have 50 or 100 milligrams of resveratrol, 25, 50, 100 common amounts that people might consume on a daily basis as part of a supplement program. So it's hardly comparable when they consume the resveratrol in red wine. And red wine itself, alcohol itself, has protective effects. It's actually been shown that whether you drink red wine or whether you drink vodka, beer, alcohol itself has somewhat of a protective effect. So that might trump the benefits of the resveratrol, making it less clear. So it's unfair conclusion that you can say resveratrol is not helpful. We also look at some comments which is posted at the Swanson website. Swanson, a maker of vitamins, and they have a very nice newsletter that you can subscribe to, where they have some very nice analysis of this study. And they point out that many other studies have shown benefits of resveratrol. And I'm just going to share a few headlines with you here. Resveratrol may reduce weight gain and protect against metabolic syndrome. Resveratrol may exert anti-obesity effects. Resveratrol increases lifespan and delays the onset of diabetes. Resveratrol may improve health and survival. Resveratrol may be beneficial in the treatment of multiple myeloma. Resveratrol improves glycemic control. Are you getting bored yet with this? I mean, I keep going and going and going. Page after page of studies that actually show, these are actual studies that show benefits. Resveratrol may improve flow-mediated dilation. That's the expansion contraction of the arteries. Resveratrol may improve insulin sensitivity in adults. Resveratrol reduces oxidation. Resveratrol may hold potential in prevention of Alzheimer's disease. Resveratrol may protect against oxidized LDL, the toxicity to the arterial wall. Resveratrol improves metabolic profile in obese subjects. Anti-inflammatory and antioxidant effects of resveratrol. And I could just keep going. Well, here's one. I love this. Resveratrol may benefit patients with ulcerative colitis. Cerebral blood flow, intestinal inflammation, semen quality, increasing the rate of fertility, and so on and so on and so on. So many studies before have shown the benefits of resveratrol. This hardly puts the resveratrol story to bed with a negative conclusion. I'm listening to the podcast because I think you'll get more perspective on the resveratrol story with this with a little lengthier explanation of what's happening. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Heart disease is the number one killer in America, but you don't need to become a statistic. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we'd like to share with you that one of the best ways that I found to support heart health is by taking Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Backed by more than 700 peer-reviewed studies, Kyolic provides powerful antioxidants that help keep your arteries healthy. It reduces homocysteine, a risk factor for heart disease. Kyolic aged garlic extract has also been shown to support healthy cholesterol levels and proper circulation. With all of these heart-healthy benefits, it's no surprise that Kyolic aged garlic extract is the best-selling garlic supplement in the world. Unlike other garlic products, Kyolic aged garlic extract is completely odorless and won't upset your stomach. Made from 100% organically grown garlic, I recommend taking Kyolic daily as part of a heart-healthy lifestyle. Kyolic aged garlic extract is available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores nationwide.
Why do I use the Spry Dental Defense System? Because it tastes great.
Because fillings are ugly.
There are a lot of reasons to use the Spry Dental Defense System. A complete line of oral care products such as toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, and more, made with 100% xylitol. But the best reason is because it works. And because it's all natural, Spry is 100% safe for kids. There are even Spry products developed especially for your children and toddlers.
Because my dental hygienist told me to.
Because it's all natural.
So ask for Spry by name whenever you buy toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, or anything else for your mouth. And make sure you're receiving all the benefits of 100% xylitol products.
Because I want a great smile, duh. Why do I use Spry? Because it works?
The Spry Dental Defense System. Great taste, less fillings. For information or to purchase Spry, visit SpryDental.com.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, updated several times weekly. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. We like to think of our weekend program as sort of the tip of the iceberg of the Intelligent Medicine phenomenon, because you can get podcasts, you can get the newsletter, you can go to the website, and there are a whole variety of ways you can participate in the knowledge experience of Intelligent Medicine. Let's talk to Joanne. Welcome.
Yes, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you.
What's your question?
I was wondering if you were familiar with the HCG diet.
Oh, yeah. Very familiar.
Yeah, right? Or some of them are called like Lighten Up or Nutrimost. I was considering trying one of them, and I just want to know your slant on them.
Well, okay, so I mean, there are a couple of ways you can do this. One is to get injections of HCG from a doctor. You know, another way is to take one of the products that purport to deliver HCG into your system, either, you know, in a pill or as some kind of drops under the tongue or in a patch. So which are you considering? Are you considering going to a doctor to get this, or are you going to consider just buying it?
They don't disclose much about the diet itself other than low calorie, but then I found out from someone else that it's like a 500-calorie diet, and you go into autophagy. What do you think about that?
Well, okay, so, yeah, let's talk about that. So what, okay, HCG is human chorionic gonadotropin, and it's made by the placenta in pregnancy, and it is thought that somehow HCG is very helpful at controlling appetite and helping you adhere to this very, very strict 500-calorie diet. Now, autophagy or autophagy means the body is eating itself, literally, which is, I guess, you know, what you want in weight loss. But here's the deal. You know, why would nature make human chorionic gonadotropin so that the female who's carrying the baby would lose tremendous amounts of weight? It doesn't make sense. Or that, you know, you eat up the fat on a woman faster. For what reason would that occur biologically? It's not clear to me that that really accelerates weight loss. Also, they did experiments way back in the 60s and 70s with HCG that were published in the New England Journal of Medicine that actually showed that they didn't really accelerate weight loss. But I'll tell you, if a patient comes to me and I say, look, I'll charge you $1,200 and I'll give you HCG injections and you're going to follow this 500-calorie diet, you know, especially if I charge a lot, they'll stick to the diet and they will lose a lot of weight.
Oh, yes, I would imagine a 500-calorie
500-calorie diet, you're going to lose weight. Now, is a 500-calorie diet really great to be on? You can lose weight, there's no question. But what happens when you're on a 500-calorie diet for a while is your body the type of patient that I really hate to see is a patient who's been dieting a lot, especially on very severe restrictive diets. Patients who've taken diet pills, have been on the HCG diet, who've lost lots and lots of weight and then regained it. It becomes harder and harder subsequently to lose the weight. And so I'm not a big fan of these programs. Unfortunately, people are looking for a quick fix, rapid, dramatic weight loss. They want to really break on through, or maybe they're trying to get ready for Aunt Sally's, destination wedding. But it doesn't really work that way. The best way to lose weight is to lose it in a slow and steady fashion, using the right kind of diet. You know, we promote a very low carbohydrate diet, exercise, and, you know, perhaps with such, adjuncts to dieting, as, you know, the proper nutritional support, but also things like Capsaicin, which is an extract of sweet pepper, actually not hot pepper, but something that is designed to accelerate metabolism slightly. And perhaps with the addition of EGCG, which is thermogenic, helps to burn fat a little bit. But, you know, I got to say that in my now nearly 30 years of practice working with nutrition, there's no shortcuts. There's no magic, unfortunately. The magic and the glitz is what attracts people, gets people to spend a lot of money and throw themselves into diet programs, buy billions of dollars worth of diet books. But ultimately, it boils down to, you know, a slow, steady, cumulative, monotonous process of losing, like a pound a month over a long period of time. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, updated several times weekly. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Our next caller is Celia. How you doing, Celia?
Dr. Hoffman, I'm calling because I have never taken vitamins for over 30 years. That's the truth. I'm in my early 80s.
And you have survived without taking a single vitamin.
Well,
you're actually
wait,
okay.
I've been in good health. God bless me. I mean, I'm lucky. But the reason I'm calling is this. I really need your opinion.
Okay.
I have been losing a lot of hair lately, which I realize may partly be due to genetics because I inherited that tendency from my mother.
Yep.
But I was told recently that taking vitamin B7, B12, and other B complex in a chewable form might promote to less loss of hair, which lasts 2 or 3 weeks, even though I'm eating very healthy.
So let me tell you the deal on that. You know, this kind of goes to the, first of all, I'm really glad that you're doing well. And, you know, this attests to the likelihood that a really good diet and good genes can, you know, let you be an octogenarian without taking a single vitamin. Are vitamins, can they act as like Miracle-Gro for your hair? And the answer is sometimes, but not always. Sometimes a key nutrient deficiency or several nutrient deficiencies will cause your hair to thin or even fall out. So in looking at hair loss, we might look at levels of critical nutrients that determine hair density, thickness, and strength, like vitamin D. We would look at zinc. We would look at your essential fatty acids. A B vitamin deficiency, especially B12, could result in hair problems. But, you know, the idea that you could take just a B complex and magically your hair will grow, that isn't necessarily the case. There is some evidence that one of the B complex, it's called PABA, may have something to do with darkening of your hair, helping you to, I know that many patients tell me that since taking a B complex or B vitamins, that their hair has, you know, gone from whiter gray to a darker color. And there's no question that that can happen with B vitamins, but I'm not sure that necessarily the B vitamins are the way to make your hair grow. You could also make use of things like saw palmetto. Some saw palmetto sometimes counteracts hair loss in women because it blocks harmful testosterone, which can encourage hair loss. And so those are some of the factors that may be involved. It may be a nutrient, but it may be something else. Well, thanks very much for joining us. Check out our website at drhoffman.com for lots more intelligent medicine information. Until next week, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.